Hi, and welcome to Awaken Your Inner Wisdom. I'm Cissy Williams, and in this interview, you'll meet the lovely Rebecca Campbell, who's a mystic, writer, and visionary, who, through her work, has transformed hundreds of thousands of people's lives all around the world. In this interview, she shares about the mystery teachings of the rose, and how the rose is a symbol of the goddess, and holds a healing medicine for our modern times. So let's head over to this interview now, where you'll meet the amazing Rebecca Campbell. Hi, Rebecca. It's amazing to have you here again. I always love speaking with you, and it's just such an honor to have you here on the podcast. So thank you for coming today.
Oh, thanks, Cece. It's, I remember when we first spoke publicly, which was probably privately too. I always love our chats and like feel like we've all always got lots to talk about.
Yeah, I think the first time we connected was when I just moved back to Britain. So It was a while ago. So we're going to talk about your Rose Oracle deck. Mm-hmm. I love all your decks, and shouldn't say it, but this is probably my favorite. I could feel I could feel the what you call the mother rose, the that ancient mother energy in it. So would you mind sharing with us how your journey began into the wisdom and the medicine and the awakening of the rose for you?
Well, I think like most journeys, like you look back and they make perfect sense, but at the time they're very, very subtle. But I could tell the story, so it's not that subtle, but it was subtle. I didn't see it at the beginning. But when I look back, I'm kind of breathtaken by the thread that has always been there. And my journey with the rose specifically began in 2010 when I was in London. So it was probably about 3 or so years before you and I met. And I was working in advertising as a creative director and knew that I was, ever since I was young, I knew the kind of soul calling path, but didn't quite get how to make it happen and all of that. And I was going through a really difficult time and started just praying of like, how can I kind of like step into the life that I know I'm being called into while everything's crumbling, you know, those rock bottom type moments. And I had a couple of people who entered my life. One was like a wisdom shaman woman I would go to, and another was someone I met at a workshop. And then there were a couple more, an artist. And all of them kept on recommending flowers or the rose. One recommended putting rose oil on my heart as I was grieving. Another recommended surrounding myself with flowers, like buying myself flowers. And she suggested pink roses. And she said, I've got pink roses right here. And actually, this is the color that she recommended, that kind of like a pale pink, but it's like that medium pink. And she said that she bought herself them when she was going through a divorce, and it was like an act of self-love, that kind of thing. So it was quite simple. And another woman who was an intuitive healer, she, I went to her for a session, but she literally has thousands of paintings of roses, which were just so beautiful. And it was really then that it began. And it was just a simple thing of like, I said, okay, I'm going to buy myself a bunch of roses every week at the flower market. And it was so subtle, but it was so strong just how much they invited my soul to come forward. I started just putting them all around my little studio apartment, and I noticed like I'd feel more connected to my soul. My job was to come up with creative ideas and they would come more. And I started recognizing, even when I was back in Australia and before that, that it was actually when I was like walking and in movement with the beauty of nature that I would get all of my ideas. Mm-hmm. And I'd do that before work. And then I'd get the bus, you know, the hour bus into the city to sit in the cubicle. And I never came up with ideas in that cubicle. I'd always do it in nature the hour before, but it was like my secret. I didn't tell anyone. Yeah. And so that's really where it began. And then I discovered Queen Mary's Rose Garden in London's Regent's Park. And around then, for many years, I knew that I got messages of writing a book and writing books and doing all of that. And so what I decided to do was I'd go walking in the rose garden and I'd write something every day on my way to work. And I didn't realize it at the time, but really it was, whether it was like the beauty of the roses that were opening my heart, which then helped me connect with my soul's voice, but writing would flow through. And it'd be like kind of like receiving a word and then a word and then a word, like following a little thread, like probably how you lead your soul journeys. And, but then also I kind of then started asking questions to the flowers. So I started talking to the flowers, but again, didn't tell anyone that. And that's really where it began. I realized how much beauty and nature lit me up. And I noticed how much I heard my soul. So my intuition, as well as was in touch with my creativity. And I see them as the same thing, creativity and intuition, like it's tapping into that intelligent consciousness. So that's really where it began. And then, you know, ever since, increasingly so, I just surrounded myself with more and more and more and more and more flowers and roses and started doing workshops. And then there came a day where I just like couldn't not talk about them. And I remember it was probably about 5 years ago, I was saying to my friend Holly Holden, oh, I've got this big event I'm meant to be talking at. It was at St. James Church with Alternatives. And I said, I can't bring myself to just go out and just like talk about the thing that I said I was meant to talk about. All I want to do is talk about, at the time, was like beauty and flowers and then also devotional chanting. And she was like, just do it. And so I began doing it. And then everything kind of expanded from there. And so years later, and so the rose and the peony as well, which looks like a rose, but it's not actually a rose, but I think it's got a similar quality to it, had always been just like a big part of everything that I would do visually with my work. Even my first oracle, even though it's nothing to do with roses, there's lots of roses in there. So it had always woven its way through. And anytime I'd do a workshop, it'd weave its way through. And my publisher, even the first big talk I did, I Can Do It in London, I spoke about the peony and the roses and how they led me to my soul calling. And then they presented me with a bunch of peonies. So it had always been there, but I'd never seen it as like part of my work. It just was, you know? And it was around, I think it was at the beginning of COVID, around that time. So what, I just had my son. So, oh my gosh, I'm forgetting years now, but I guess like sometime in 2020, I just received really clearly that my next oracle was meant to be on the rose, and I was contracted for something else. And I sent an email to Michelle, my publisher, and said, I think maybe it's meant to be Sisterhood of the Rose or something about the rose. And I was expecting her to say, oh, that's really nice, and I know you love roses, but not. And she was like, yes, great. Like, it was just like instant. And so then it just really opened this gateway to research and swim in the mysteries of the rose, which was like one of my favorite topics. But sometimes these things that you're naturally passionate about, you don't think other people are going to be interested in. So that's where it began. There's lots more to tell besides that, but that's the general thread.
I can feel as you are sharing this, how if we now see, and I know that you share this, that we see the rose as the mother, as the goddess, as this ancient wisdom that is here still and guiding us. It's like she was there in your grief. You welcomed her into your home. Mm. She was there to hold you and support you in the rose garden and kind of guide you to that intuitive expression that you have since shared with, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of people. It's like she's always been there. And then now, and I think that's what I could feel as well. And I'm sure so many have felt it in your rose oracle. It's so deep. It's like, it's so you. Mm-hmm. So then when you were allowed to share it, it's like for everybody else, it's like, yes, of course, you've been doing this all along. But for you, it's like, I couldn't see it. But it's the most, and that's often the case when it is something mm-hmm. that is so absolutely authentically us. It's mm-hmm. so obvious to you that you don't think anyone else will be interested because it's just obvious to you. Yeah. So I love that. And something I really love that you're sharing in your oracle is how she's linked with the goddesses. Would you mind sharing some more on that? Because I find that fascinating.
Isn't it? And I mean, I'm in awe of it as well and still kind of like following the mystery trail. But essentially, I had intuitively been drawn to her, as I have explained. And it was only in my research that I realized that, like, just how steeped in history and feminine, divine feminine history she is. So essentially, the rose is like millions and millions and millions of years old, right? But what I didn't know is that she's a sacred symbol for ancient feminine mysteries of many, many different cultures, all corners of the world. And the physical rose is actually from all corners of the world as well, which is, you know, not all plants are. And so, you know, the white rose from China and the red from Europe, and then it kind of spread from there. But from, you know, the goddess Inanna to Isis to Aphrodite, Venus, so many different goddesses, Celtic goddesses as well. The rose is this thread within it. And there's many stories about the rose, like Flora naming the rose when she was in ecstasy, when she was falling in love with Eros, and Eros meaning like rose. That's where the word rose came from. So there's so many stories like that. But there's also stories like the word sub rosa means under the rose, as in secrecy. And this is the bit that it just blows my mind, how the rose has actually been this secret symbol. And I'm still discovering it. Like I was just up at the Lady Chapel here in the Abbey, and there is the symbol of the rose there, and often the Lady Chapel's underneath. Then there's at the back of St. John's Church, there is this tomb, and then there's the rose there as well. And many believe that the symbol of the rose, particularly on ancient churches, means in many cases that it was of worship of Mary. And Mary has been thought to, like, the etymology of that name is female priest, priestess. And so, yeah, it just blows my mind at how subtle and yet strong the symbolism of the rose is, and how far back it reaches. And what I've noticed as well, because when I first got into roses, it was a little bit like it was like a grandma thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't that trendy. But then if I even just look back like a couple of years, I started noticing like so many of like the top fashion houses, like Dolce & Gabbana and all of this, all of a sudden it was all about the rose. Mm-hmm. And so I've noticed it's actually really just come back, and it's easy to find rose prints and clothes and all of that. Whereas previously it was kind of, you know, those kind of old fashioned rose curtains. And so I do feel like the rose as a symbol is infiltrating the masses again now. And
it's rising. Kind of
really interesting. Yeah, exactly. And there's no coincidence with it. Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's like, you know, Mary and the Black Madonna, they were safe to worship, but their roots obviously go way, 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 way back to the pagan roots. And then it's like the rose was safe to have, but again, it goes way, 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 way back. And now the rising of the feminine, we're starting to decode these deeper mysteries that's always been with us.
Right.
We just were not aware of it consciously, but they survived.
Exactly. Yeah. I think it's so fascinating. And like, even just reading story or finding out information, like, for example, that this is a basic one, but the hawthorn and apple are linked to the rose, like from the same, they're all linked. And then there is an ancient
I think that story. Was lovely that you share that, actually. Isn't that so cool?
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
Especially like, we obviously have the Glastonbury connection, and so we know about Glastonbury being Isle of Apples, and the hawthorn, the holy thorn, and
all
of them are to do with the heart as well.
But also if you look at, sorry, but I got to talk to you this because I think it's so cool. If you look at the Norse sagas, and you have the apples from Eden, she comes with her magical apples. It's the life essence. It's the life force. Even the gods have to eat it. Otherwise, they will not survive.
Mm-hmm. And that's our essence, and it spreads through the wisdom of the feminine.
Yes.
That's what it represents, exactly. The wisdom of the feminine. Yeah.
Exactly. And there is a story from Peru where it's similar, because you brought up Eden, right? And there's the Garden of Eden, and then the getting kicked out of the garden, which is, I think, caused like the rose having to exist for the feminine rather than, yeah. But in that story, it's actually a rose, not an apple. And so, yeah, And I think in my experience with the rose, because I think when most people think of roses, they're like, well, there's that kind of cliche of like love and beauty and, you know, Valentine's Day and all of that, like waiting for someone to give you roses. But then there's a softness, but most people think of the bloom, but really the rose is like, to me, she is like the great mother in the sense, and the dark mother as well, where she gives you what you need. When you're working with the rose, it's subtle, but so powerful. And I think that most people expect it to be soft and beautiful and all loving. And it can be, but it can also be really deep and dark in that cloak of winter kind of way, in that fertile void, in that, you know, falling into my arms, falling into the arms of the great mother, learning why the rose has the thorn. In order to protect the bloom and yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember this was way before I knew anything, really. It was when I had my first dark night of the soul when I was 24. And I started on my spiritual journey. I shared it so many times. But one of the things I haven't shared with people is that I was very drawn to rose oil. Mm. And I would do exactly what you were sharing. I would put rose oil over my heart chakra and also between my shoulder blades because I felt I had like a big wound there. Mm. And I would walk around with a rose quartz in my bra. And it was that. That's like the dark mother territory to hold you in your deepest grief and suffering and despair, but with such compassion holding you so it can start to come up. But she's there with her loving arms and it's nothing... You know, it's not lovey-dovey or light. It's really not. But you can feel you being loved through that process.
Totally.
Yeah. So that's love that you share that. That's what brought you to it initially was that going through your own dark night of the soul. And there she was with the rose guiding you.
And I think...
Initiating you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the invitation in those moments, which don't feel like moments, they're more like lifetimes, it feels like.
They last a while.
They do. We always want them to go quicker. But I think what I received in with the rose oil at that point, when it sounds like we were doing the same thing really, is like, it was like, keep my heart open, but protect it as well. So it's like, it's that strengthening and softening at the same time, which I think, like you say, like that is what the Great Mother gives us. And like, it reminds me of a ritual I did. It was just before I got married with a couple of friends, my friend Holly and Lisa and Amy. And we did it in the White Springs in Glastonbury. And each of them played like maiden, mother, crone essentially, and I journeyed between the three of them, and Holly was in the corner of the Black Madonna, and I know you know where I'm talking about in the
white. I do. amazing in that.
And so they embodied that archetype, and they were, some of them were singing, some of them like they weren't being themselves, they were basically being a vessel, and Holly was the mother. And I was to go from her to crone, wise woman. And it's kind of like stepping into my adulthood, da, da, da. And I remember wanting to like stay with her, like just keep me in your arms kind of thing. And there was a point, and we both spoke about it after. And she said, oh my gosh, there was this point where I was like, have to do what the mother does, but the mother doesn't want to do it, but she knows she needs to for her child. where she kind of like pushed me off, like as in like, it's time now. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that I'm thinking of that right now as we're talking, where it's like there's the strengthening and the softening, the yeah, that quality of the great mother and Mother Rose and all of that, where it's like it's not always gentle and soft, but it's what we need.
Yeah. Plus also, if you know, if you think of nature, in order for you to grow, mm. you have to leave, and then it has to disintegrate mm-hmm. and go back into the earth so mm-hmm. it can be reborn again, and then it can grow and expand. And that's, it goes through these cycles. So if we always stay in the maiden or the mother, if mm-hmm. we don't want to go into the crone where it needs to go back again, and you're right. developing another type of magic and power and wisdom as you're allowing that
mm.
to, as you're allowing yourself to be taken, I feel it's like going into the sacred cauldron of the dark mother, her sacred womb space, where we have absolutely no control. We just have to yeah. surrender into that journey, that transformation that she'll take us on. Mm-hmm. And that's how we then expand as we later reemerge, just like the rose will do, the rose bushes. So that's how they grow.
So true. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's amazing though, when you witness it, when you go through like a sacred ritual like that, a ceremony like that, and you can see where you have your own attachments.
Mm-hmm.
So you can witness that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Totally. And what a beautiful learning as well before motherhood.
Totally.
Yeah. Because I have found that has been one of the greatest blessings for being a mother. One of the hardest things is when the death of every stage. And you're so joyful for their expansion, but at the same time, you mourn the previous stage. And it's this constant balance. And at the same time, it allows you to grow as a being as you allow them to move through that expansion.
Totally.
Yeah.
And it's like just when you think you're getting used to one phase, it changes.
Yeah. And then you get another baby in the mix too. And it's lovely because it kind of forces is the wrong word. It helps us to expand and embrace more. Yeah. Even in the letting go, you have to expand in order to let someone you love go so that they can continue to expand. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful. So I take it that your life has changed tremendously, both from following the whispers of the rose. And I can see now why you always call it the whispers from your soul. It's like she's been whispering always through her presence for you. But as you were given the go ahead to really dive deep into her mysteries, her ancient teachings, how did that change you?
You know, it's interesting. I feel like more than anything else I've created, it's been very effortless. And my creative process has always had resistance and will always, like I know it will. That's part of the creative process. But it comes easily when it comes, when the resistance isn't there.
But how do you do the resistance? How does it show up for you? I find that really interesting.
You know, just kind of like you might doubt it or you might be blocked one day. And then I know that when I'm blocked, it's like, or I'm feeling like, oh, I don't know. I don't know what to write about here. I don't know what to do. I then need to flip it. And so I'm connecting with my muse rather than expecting myself to be an expert. Do you know what I mean? There's always, when the resistance comes up, there's a flip I need to do, and then something incredible will come, but the resistance will often come before it.
Yeah. And do you also then have a structure so that you still show up?
Yeah. So
to be there for that presence when it comes, rather than procrastinating.
Totally. I'm really good with discipline.
I gather that.
My upbringing and also when I was a creative director where I had to come up with ideas on cue, come up with headlines on cue. Like I'd have to come up with sometimes 400 headlines for one to come through. So,
oh my God.
Yeah. And sometimes they'd be scrunched up in front of me. So yeah, as a sensitive, it definitely taught me how to
keep going.
Yeah. And I'm really grateful for it because like I'm getting clearer and clearer that my work is about weaving the sacred back into the everyday. And so, you know, because I think if we go with the concept that intuition, spirituality, basically spirit, mysticism, all of that, and creativity are really the same thing. Like they're consciousness and spirit that we're tapping into. That's the way I see creativity. And I think that what happens with a lot of creatives and a lot of sensitives is we kind of like get stuck here, particularly in our society, which largely the sacred isn't there. I mean, it is there, but it's not in our culture. It's not in our society. It's been unwoven through, you know, whether it's persecution or whatever it is, but on the whole, the thread has been pulled out, right? Mm. So I know that what I'm being called to do is weave that thread back in. And it was actually, it was around the time when I started working on this oracle. I was walking, it was in COVID time, so everything was kind of locked down. So you started, when you lived in Glastonbury, you started to work out who actually lived here. and you'd have fields to yourself. It was amazing. I remember where
it must have been amazing.
It was amazing. And I felt very grateful for it. And so I was a very new mum then. So what I would do, which has always been my daily practice, was walking on my own. And it's almost like walking towards what I'm becoming, if that makes sense. And mm-hmm. that's always when I do my best writing. And like I'll go for a walk, whether it's to the Rose Garden or the country lanes or whatever. And I'll walk with a question and then I'll kind of like write it down on my phone, but it's like following a thread. And it was one of those mornings and I remember where I was in this field. I was looking up at the tour and something just stopped me where I just kind of realized, and it's the most, when I look back now, it's like the most obvious thing in the world, but I hadn't seen it in this way where I realized, even though I had literally like completely for almost 10 years, 100% devoted my life to living a soul-led life. So to me, that means what's my soul calling me to do? And then I'm going to like put my mind and my body to work to do it. But still, I saw how compartmentalized my life was. Like I'd go and do spiritual practice and I'd go and get grounded in nature. So it was still kind of like separate. Mm-hmm. And becoming a mum really, 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 like, I think it just honed into me because I couldn't do my morning practice the way I did. I think I've had one morning I've woken up before my crazy son. Like, I can't do morning practice anymore. And doesn't mean I don't do my practice. I do my practice, but I've always been bite-sized. Like, it's like 10 minutes. Like, even when I, because I've always been a busy person, right? When I was a creative director, I'd do it in the morning. But if I didn't do 10 minutes, if I was trying to do an hour, I wouldn't do it every day. Mm. So anyway, so I'm kind of going on a tangent now and I'm forgetting the question that you originally asked, but what was the question? As I want to say about 10 things right now.
say the 10 things and we let it unfold. I think that's the best.
So I just think that while I was working with the rose, one of the biggest things that it showed me was how to weave the sacred back in or how to see the sacred that's already here. Because I think particularly like in the new age, but not just new age, it's like spirituality is separate. But if we look at that word spirituality, ritual is repetition. Ritual's like showing up. It's integration. It's embodiment. And so I think both of them are just so important. And I think that when it comes to, it was creative process we were talking about. One thing I've always been very good at is embodiment of my creative process. So doing, and maybe it was my upbringing. My mum was a really hard worker. So was my dad. and like they weren't spiritual at all. Like I don't know where that came from me. The only explanation I can think of is soul. I came in with it. The stuff I would say to mum when I was younger, it has to be that. But that upbringing grounded me tremendously. And I was always very clear on, you got to show up with discipline. You know, if you want to become good at a craft, you got to practice at it. And
absolutely.
So whether it's creativity or spirituality connection, it's like, we got to act on it. And so I think this compartmentalization is how so many of us are living. And I actually think that it can be quite painful when, say, we have our first awakening, which is amazing. And well, you know, there's probably like a dark night of the soul, which is excruciating. But then there is like this expansion, right? Where it's like, wow, look. And we think there's an answer. And then we realize, oh, no, there's not. And this will never end.
Then you go through the next cycle of
it's the next cycle.
But yeah, it's that magical when you go, oh my God, you've just fallen into a different universe that you didn't even know existed. And it's like, oh, this is amazing. Yeah.
But what I saw when I was standing in that field that day was that the day that happened for me, and I know I'm not alone in this, it was like a whole new world opened up. And that was amazing. And I loved that world. And yet, but I couldn't quite live in that world because, you know, my normal life wasn't in that world. But then the previous world just felt so far away. And so all of a sudden there's these two worlds that are existing. And so I'm going into this one and then I'm going into this one. And what I think that we're being called to create is to realize that this world is actually in this world. But how do we see the sacred that's already here? And to me, this is going to be like obvious and like totally out there. I don't know which one it is. But to me, the rose does that. Because no matter
who's about to say exactly the same. Yeah. That's what you're embodying. She's always been here. And yet she had all these answers, all this wisdom, all this ancient whispers from the goddess, from the feminine, still here.
Right.
That is rising within you. And it's amazing because you're embodying that. So I can imagine when you suddenly realized it's not a compartmentalization anymore for you, as you dived into this, you became an embodiment of her.
Right.
Through this.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I think the question is, because I'm looking at the rose now, and I don't know many people who could look at this rose, like even my dad, who is adamant, when you're dead, you're dead, and let's not talk about anything else. Maybe it won't be a rose for him, but he's got where he lives. They look out. They've got a beautiful view. Every night he's watching the sunset, and he's just like, wow.
Yeah.
He's in awe. When you look at a rose, you're in awe.
Yeah.
You're stepping into the mystical. You're acknowledging the sacred.
Yeah.
And, you know, we could get geeky and be like, oh, it's because of sacred geometry and it's because of this and this and this. But it's seeing the sacred that's here.
Yeah.
And when we look back at, like, the work that you do is about this, like, when we reach back to the indigenous wisdom of our ancestry, which we all have, it's just a lot of it has been taken all over the world. Those teachings are there.
They're in our bones.
They are. And in my experience, like I grew up in Australia, I now live here in the UK. And it happened because like when I was 18, I just like had to go. And I found myself in ancient stone circles. And I've got Nordic ancestry. Probably not as much as you, but most of it is Scottish and Irish. It's all around there. But they were the three. I ended up in Sweden. I ended up in Norway. I ended up in these places that were of my ancestry. And I didn't know that they were. And I was standing there with the stones and the trees and the yew trees and the churchyards and the this and the that. And now I can see, and I've since studied herbalism and, you know, been on this whole journey with the rose. And I can see that, oh, I'm actually connecting with the wisdom of my ancestry through nature. because that hasn't been passed down to me through teachings of elders. Because, you know, I mean, for starters, the rose, because it was a symbol of the goddess, it was forbidden in graveyards through the Middle Ages.
It's just so crazy. Power. Seriously. It's stuff they came up with. It's just insane.
Yeah.
I think it's so amazing. So, and again, I've shared this so many times with some of the listeners, so I apologize in advance, but I thought this was so cool when I discovered this, that in our ancient Norse sagas, they talk about the ancient witch before time. She's the one that created the worlds. And this ancient witch, they call it the witch within the wood. And the wood can be different woods, but one of them is Yggdrasil, the world tree. And Yggdrasil is a representation of our nervous system. With the roots going down, connecting us with the past, with our ancestors, the branches going up, connecting us with that which we are becoming and the heavens. And the trunk is here with the chakras. And then you have a serpent at the roots of the tree, which is like the Kundalini energy. You have an eagle at the top of the tree. You have a hawk between the eye of the eagle and represents spirit and the third eye. And this is all in our Norse sagas. And that this ancient witch within the wood, she's always within our core, and she's rising. She's here. And I see her as this ancient goddess that they try to suppress, they try to get rid of, but she cannot be killed. You know, she's still there. And I feel that she's awakening and rising in so many of us in so many different ways, shapes, and form, whether it's be like you dived into the ancient teachings of the rose and others dive into the teachings of the body or the teaching of ancient traditions or whatever it is, but she is rising. Or like we see now, the holy rage that's rising, the wrath of the dark goddess, which is when her children are being threatened and our lives are being threatened, not just ours, but also of her. She is life itself. She will rise. You see it in Iran, you see it everywhere. She cannot be suppressed anymore. And I feel that what you are sharing, and I feel the passion in you as you're sharing this, is because that's what she's doing through you. She's rising. So you can awaken others through this, and they will awaken others and others and others until we are all coming together, risen, and can share her medicine to an absolutely insane world. Because it's gone insane. It's gone so insane. And I think it's wonderful to feel that coming through you. I really do. You must feel it too, that you can feel the power that is rising within you in that.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's because I'm just finishing another oracle. It's not out till like next year. But it's on the waters, like healing waters, like these things are just so simple, like this. And I think this is the thing of like the mystic way. It's like everything is our mirror. Everything has the key, like to open the door to experience the sacred. And it's like if we could just see it in the everyday things that are already here right in front of us, it's like, whoa, like, how different the world would be if we all saw water as sacred, or we all saw flowers as sacred, or we all saw the soul in the person in front of us, you know?
Exactly. How would it change the way we treat nature and each other? And I mean, it would change everything. It would be this incredible paradigm shift, which is her teachings. Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. So that's taking you on a completely new journey in a way then, this time with the beautiful medicine of the waters. And have you been doing this then also during the time of the beginning, maybe when you were pregnant, or did you do it before?
Yeah. We've been creating really through that.
Wow.
Interesting. And so, yeah, it'll be, basically a 9-month journey.
Wow. Whilst you're living in the place of the sacred wells.
Yeah.
How amazing is that?
I know. I know. Very, very beautiful.
I'd just like you to share one thing, which I thought was absolutely amazing when I read it in your Rose Oracle. How you found your house.
Oh, right.
And the name of the house.
I've been praying to the land of this entire planet to tell me where my home was for, honestly, like about 3 years. I was receiving a message for such a long time to return to the earth, to seed the light. Like, it was all going into the earth. And so I knew I kept on having a vision of being in nature, laying on soft grass, the rose garden nearby, but I couldn't work out where it was. We were about to move back to Australia. We just didn't know. I knew London chapter was closing. And so at the last minute, I was on my way to Germany the next day for a workshop, and we had to make a decision by the time we got back of what we were going to do. And I'd been praying for guidance for 3 years, no answer except for that one vision. So I just said to my husband, you're going to have to decide, because I'm just getting nothing. And I know the answer to that, which means wait, but I know you're getting frustrated. So I got nothing. And then this one morning was the first morning I woke up where I finally got guidance, which was Glastonbury. And Glastonbury had been a place that, like, I'd run retreats there for years. But prior to that, it was a place that I would go for, like, just on my own to, like, replenish, rejuvenate, and to write as well. And my husband was like, great, let's do it. And so I looked online. I was thinking we'd just rent somewhere while we went back to Australia to figure out if we did want to live there or where we wanted to live, just to buy us a bit of time. And I looked online, like, I kid you not, for like 5 minutes, like no more than that. And I saw this place that was for rent, but it was also for sale. We've been looking in London. We had bought a house, but then we had sold our place, and then it fell through a week before we were moving in. Like, it was just, yeah. And so we'd seen hundreds of places in London, they weren't right. And so we drove to Glastonbury that next morning at like 6 a.m., literally arrived at like 10 as the real estate was opening, and begged them to show us this property. And they were kind of like, yeah, we'll show you in 2 weeks' time. I'm like, no, it has to be like in the next half hour. And we saw it, and I just knew it was our place, which,
wow,
it's not a normal thing for me. Like, we'd seen a lot of properties before. I'm not an impulsive real estate person. And both of us just knew. And it was very run down. And I look back at pictures now and I'm like, gosh, what do we see in it? But it was very old and charming, but it just felt right. And I mean, I love it now. But like, the garden was, there's an ancient yew tree on it. So, which is protected, which is obviously a very sacred tree, but nothing else. Like, there was tarmac in the garden, and it was just like
neglected. Tarmac, the garden.
I know. And so then as the months turned into 2 months, 3 months, and then 6 months, I knew I wanted to put a rose garden in there with David Austin roses. They were my favorite. And I found a local gardener who said he'd coach me on how to grow roses, because I was never like patient enough to do it. And so he did. And I found out actually he used to work at the Royal Parks in London in the rose garden. So that was the beautiful sign. I just found him on Google. He's just a local guy, just gorgeous. And yeah, so we started doing that. And then little by little, then we put in more yew trees, and the honeysuckle started to grow back, and the jasmine started to grow back. And we didn't even know that they existed, because they were cut so far right back. It looked like they weren't even there. And then all these old roses, like Gallica roses, dog roses, wild roses, started to grow all over the house.
Wow.
Which, again, you couldn't see that they were there before. And then the neighbors would stop us, particularly like the older ones who'd been there for like decades and decades, and we're like, oh, it's so great you're bringing back the roses. And we're like, in the garden and all of that. Well, but it kept on coming, this message. And in the end, we found out about three owners ago, there was an old lady who lived there for most of her life, and her whole thing was roses. And the whole garden was dense with roses. And she would get the bus to London to the Chelsea Flower Festival to the David Austin display every single year to get a new David Austin and then plant it. Wow. Yeah. And the actual house used to be called the Old Rose Cottage.
I know. I'm shivering now because when I read that, I was like, this is just amazing. It's
mental. Yeah. And yeah. And so I'm kind of like, whoa, like, what is that about? Like, I had the vision of the roses before I even knew about the house, like the rose garden. But obviously the rose connection existed before. So it's not like the house connected me to the roses because that already existed. But then while we were living there, and because my husband worked with me on the research of the project, so we were both really into it. And yeah, like, did the project come because of the house or did the house come good? Like, what?
Or it was just always meant for you. It's like, yeah, she called you. It's like the spirit of the house, of the garden, called you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to be the next caretaker. It's nearly as if that old lady kind of guided you there.
Yeah.
Again, revive what she started. And who better than you?
Yeah,
this is
what we were meant to do or something.
And I do feel that's what I could sense when I picked up your oracles the first time when I did a reading with them. It's that this is your medicine that you're sharing. It's beautiful. It's always been there in everything you've done, but this is, I don't know, it's deeper. It's like you come home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. It's like you come home. And you have, haven't you? Amazing, amazing. Is there anything else you would like to share?
I think just like there's such a thread in what we've been talking about in like, finding like slowing down. And when I say slowing down, I mean like I've got a really fast paced life. I'm not talking about like having to walk really slowly or not do much, because that's not how I live for sure. But like to slow down in the rare moments when you are slowed down, to see the sacred that's already here. I think that is just, yeah, what I think, where the medicine is. And I think the easiest way to do that is by noticing beauty in front of you. And it doesn't have to be in a flower. It doesn't have to be in the ocean. It doesn't have to be anything to do with nature, although I think nature is the easiest access point for us. But to just take a moment to like see the beauty around us, because when we appreciate beauty, I feel, whether it's poetry or music or art or, yeah, nature, it's like our soul comes more deeply into our body. Mm. And so those two worlds kind of weave back together. And I think that's my deepest prayer for, I guess, like humanity. I think since I was little, I've just like ached for that wisdom, like, or ached for the recognition of the sacred, whether it was like the soul within me or the sacred in the trees and all around us. And so, yeah.
The sacred in our lives here. So it's not just disconnected up there in the heavens. Right. It's here.
Yeah.
As we are breathing and being here. Thank you. Thank
you. Awesome. Thank you, Cece. Thank you, everyone.
For more information about Rebecca and her work, visit rebeccacampbell.me. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. Bye-bye.